Before we begin this morning, I do have one more announcement to add. Yesterday evening, or afternoon evening, I was able to attend the wedding of Carl and Jordan, and very beautiful event. Congratulations, guys. But this morning, Jordan, J.J. Blankenship, for the very first time, wants to announce her membership here at Azalea City Church of Christ. So, Jordan, you got to stand. Nobody can see you. But for real, congrats, guys, for you guys as you begin your life. And J.J., we're happy to officially welcome you here to Azalea. So it was a Saturday in February where Grayson was playing basketball. So he played Youth Development League basketball at Mobile Christian with his teammates and then got an opportunity to continue playing through this organization. So he did, and I think this may have been the second game, or actually the third game, second Saturday that he played. Ashley was with Riley at a volleyball tournament, and it's in the, I think, second quarter. And Grayson gets the ball along the baseline. It was in the third quarter, my bad, kid. So Grayson gets the ball along. He knows where I'm going with this story. Goes along the baseline, dribbles, jump stops, goes to shoot. Kid takes his legs out, kind of runs up under him. Didn't mean to, but, you know, it's just physical basketball. Falls down the ground, and, you know, any kid hits the deck, they're probably going to hurt a little bit. And he looks up at me, and I see, you know, I don't know how many teeth he has, but let's say he has 20 teeth in his head. He had 19 and a half. And I'm looking, I'm like, oh, my word. So I kind of jump down the bleachers and run out there real quick, and I'm thinking to myself all these things. Like, number one is his lip's not cut, his nose isn't broken, there's really no blood other than what's coming from that tooth. And he's kind of panicked. I'm like, dude, it's going to be fine. No worries. We get to the sideline, and then I'm like, okay, we've got to call a dentist, figure this out. And for the life of me, I could not even remember my kid's dentist name at the time. I guess just overwhelmed by the moment. So I call Ashley, and I'm like, hey, real quick, what are our name? And she's like, why? And I'm like, well, Grayson just broke his front tooth. She's like, Justin, it's a permanent tooth. I'm like, Ashley, I know that, but I don't, I mean, I can't just stick it back on there. Anyway, it was in that moment and through this process, and I'll tell a little more about it here in a second, that I realized that how important knowing people and having a connection with people is. Because we cannot live this life alone. We cannot do this life by ourselves. We need each other. Later on, right at the end of that game, one of Grayson's teammates' dads walks over to me and is checking on Grayson. Turns out he's a dentist. Huge help. So he calls the dentist that is on call for that weekend. He calls my own kid's dentist because he has his personal cell phone number. That guy was out duck hunting with his son for the weekend. My kid's personal dentist now has called me on a Saturday afternoon to check on Grayson and just says, hey, look, let's just take a couple of days, manage his pain, and come see me first thing Monday morning. So we go, he inspects it, pulp exposure, like nerves exposed there because the break was so bad. He sends us to an endodontist. We go to this endodontist. Grayson has an emergency root canal. Turns out that we have friends that work for this endodontist that got us in right away. They even backed everybody up. Sorry if you were supposed to get a root canal that day and Grayson took your spot. But backed everybody up so we could get there at 8:30 in the morning. He's having an emergency root canal to fix that tooth. And then we have this tooth in a bag of ice that we kept all weekend. They send us home after that. And it's like three or four people that work there. Everybody took super good care of Grayson. Then we go back, Ashley takes him back to the dentist later on, and they take that tooth, they bond it together, and later that afternoon, he smiles, you can't tell anything different. They did tell us to protect it, so, you know, we bought mouthpieces and all. Now he has these Invisalign braces, and the other day I was hitting ground balls to the team, and a ball takes a bad hop, hits him right in the mouth, and the tooth breaks again in the same exact spot. This was last week. Called the dentist. Now I have his number. He gave that to me. The guy says, listen, show up at 7:30. We open at 7:30. Be there. Be the first one. We'll work him in. He had Bible times day that day. He was Goliath and had to give a speech and all. So we work in there, walk in there at 7:20. They take him back at 7:25, and by 7:55, everything's good again. We'll go on, rock on the rest of the day. Here's the deal. I couldn't have done any of that myself. Ashley could not have done any of that herself. We need people in this life. So I want to talk this morning about this underground network. And I should have added Ephesians 4. You may not even be able to read it, but first, well, our brother Scott read to us, Acts 2, what Cecil read to us. Ephesians 4, all three tell us the same thing, is that there is unity in the body of Christ. But we're all different and individual members of that body. Life has become so transactional. I know we probably hear that a lot. We're just worried about the next thing. We're kind of just like, I'm going to give you something and I expect something in return. Life has become so transactional when really us should be relational. It should be something that we spend time in getting to know people and understand people and really help live life with each other. I think about this in the way that college athletics has gone and the way that we grew up. We watched kids go to certain universities and they were there for 4 years. And they were playing whatever sport it was for those 4 years or maybe three in football. Sometimes it got kind of weird in basketball where it was one and done for a while. And then they, if they were good enough, would go on to play professionally. Nowadays, it has become, again, transactional instead of relational. Nobody. Many don't go to college because I grew up rooting for this team. I want to go here. I want to spend 3 or 4 years here until hopefully I get drafted or I'm finished playing athletics, whatever it may be. Nowadays, instead of a coach going to your house and eating dinner with your family and going to your high school games and really recruiting you and living life with you and trying to understand you and your family in order to recruit you to play college ball, they just come and say, hey, I'll give you $1 million. Right? Alabama's going to give you $1 million. LSU might give you 1.2. That's all it is. It's transactional nowadays. There is no more, or at least it's very little, of a coach actually going to someone's house and trying to learn about their family and recruit them. Why do we do that? Because at the end of that year, that kid now is not going to be like, man, I love playing for the Auburn Tigers. I want to keep playing here. No, it's like, hey, they're offering me $750,000 to go play. Auburn's far poorer than Alabama and LSU. They're waiting for somebody to come along and pay them more. And as soon as they pay them more, I'm gone. Who cares about the pageantry at athletics? Who cares about the fan base? Who cares about the university? Life for us, I'm afraid, and sometimes in the church too, it's become so transactional. We have failed to really build relationships. We hear people all the time talking about, man, it takes a village to raise a child. Or I'm very thankful for my village or my tribe, community or my family. That's exactly right, because we all are a product of our raising. Being depends on our community. So this idea of this underground network, I went the wrong way, is something back in my tree counting days I learned when I was at Auburn. I took class, tree physiology, and we studied mycorrhizae. And what mycorrhizae is, it is, myco is fungus, rhiza is root. So you get this root fungus. It's much better than toe fungus. But root fungus here, where it's this fungus that attaches to the roots of trees, and it's a symbiotic relationship between the two, where the fungus helps to absorb water, nutrients, different things, in order for that tree to absorb those. All right, so it just helps to branch out, to expand the footprint. So it helps the tree out. And what the tree gives it in return is sugar that is necessary to grow, or carbohydrates that are given through photosynthesis. Because the mycorrhizae, the fungus, is in the root system. It can't gain any energy from light. It can't photosynthesize. So it's this symbiotic, mutual relationship where not only is it where this fungus attaches to the roots of trees and plants and helps them out, and the tree in return helps it out, but also for one tree to connect to the root system of another tree. So now, not only are nutrients shared between this fungus that is absorbing stuff in the soil and giving it to one tree, it's giving it to a network of trees. So now we have this underground network, and I'm going to show you how this works spiritually as well. So mycorrhizae form vast underground networks connecting trees and plants through these fungal pathways. Nutrients are shared. It helps to improve plant growth and survival. They help each other tolerate drought. They actually help each other weather the storms of life. I'm pretty sure that's spiritual. Their strong and mature trees can actually help support weaker trees. Don't you think the more mature spiritually should help support the weaker spiritually? Trees can, also I found this pretty fascinating, trees can actually warn other trees. So if there's a tree out there, it's connected in this mycorrhizal network that is being attacked by some disease, or it's stressed out because of some lightning strike that it has endured or whatever, it can actually send communication through this mycorrhizal network to warn other trees that, hey, watch out for this pest because it's attacking me and it's affecting me. Be on guard. Ain't that amazing? Isn't that what we would do as humans? Like, hey, there's a bad guy in the neighborhood. Hey, everybody, watch out. My house got broken into. Make sure you're locking your doors. Right? This is what trees do. Isn't it crazy how God designed them to be a lot like humans, except probably trees are probably nicer to each other than humans are nicer to other humans from time to time. So basically the entire forest, sorry for all the science stuff, this is for free. You don't have to pay me anymore. Although Ezra did say, give me $1 today for preaching, so I'm looking forward to that later on. The entire forest becomes interdependent. They become dependent upon one another. It's not, trees don't live in isolation. Plants don't live in isolation. And the problem is that what Satan is so good, and he's done it from the beginning of human history, is that when you and I have a problem, we try to isolate ourselves instead of share with each other. When you and I sometimes even run into good news, we try to isolate that and hold on to that instead of sharing that with other people. So the entire forest can, through this mycorrhizal network, this underground network, can become interdependent with each other. I'm pretty sure God designed the church to be interdependent, us helping each other out along the way. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 16, from whom the whole body, joined and held together by every joint with which it is equipped, when each part is working properly, makes the body grow so that it builds itself up in love. Exactly what Cecil read in Acts chapter 2 about they had all things in common. You know, Terry just preached this past week on the resurrection of Jesus Christ. We just celebrated Easter. I know we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus every Sunday, every day of our lives. But what's next? And you think about what was next for those disciples after Jesus not only resurrected from the grave and he started going to all of them to prove to him that he proved to them that he was the Son of God and it was him. He ascends into heaven and multiple times they're like, what do we do now? What was the next steps for the apostles at that time? It was now to go and to tell and share about the good news of Jesus Christ. Go and tell other people to live your lives together, to be connected, to be interdependent of each other, to help establish the church and help grow the church. And if you look in Acts 2 and Acts 3 and Acts 4 and Acts 5, how the church grew rapidly. And it exponentially grew because of the blessings that God had given them, because they had the gift of the Holy Spirit, because they were connected to each other, because they were sharing their possessions, they were selling possessions, every proceed they were giving to each other, they were making sure that everybody was successful. So here's our role in this underground network. Obviously, through more than just a root fungus, but through Jesus Christ, you and I are connected. 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 12, for just as the body is one unit, there's unity in the individual members, and has many members. We should not just live separate lives, we should share life with each other. Acts 2:44, all who believed were together. Early Christians didn't just gather with each other. They shared their lives with each other. Christianity, tree networks, not meant to live in isolation. Christianity is not meant for us to live in isolation. So here's what, this kind of goes back to what Bill was talking about in Bible class this morning. We then move from just checking a box and saying, hey, you know what, I attended Azalea City Church of Christ this morning, or I attended worship this morning. We move from just going to attend to having a deeper connection with people. We go from just knowing the names of people we worship with and knowing the needs of the people we worship with. We help supply
what others lack.
1 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 25, that there may be no division in the body, but that the members may have the same care for one another. Acts chapter 2 and verse 45. And they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. The needs were met through something, I love this phrase, intentional generosity. A lot of times I think you and I, we like to write checks and we think, man, we're being super generous, we're putting it in a collection plate, and then we're kind of hands off from there on out. Not saying that the elders aren't doing a great job and the ministry leaders and deacons are not doing a great job of making sure every ministry is fulfilled here. That's one of those things why I like Walk for Water so much, I think. It's because we know exactly what we're giving to. Right? And again, I'm not doubting the elders or finance deacon or anybody else in here. But in Acts 2 and in 1 Corinthians 12, there was intentional generosity. It's not just I'm being generous with the money that I have and just going to write a check and put it in the collection plate and be done. It was intentional. They knew what they were doing. They knew how they were helping. That's why, again, Walk for Water, there are other ministries as well, that I know exactly what money is going to for those people. I know exactly that we are helping not just to give a better quality of life, but we're actually helping save lives through a ministry like that. At the time in Acts 2, no one was overlooked. Now, the church grew rapidly, so by the time you get to Acts 6, they were starting to have a group of people that were overlooked, right? And then we have these apostles that to people say, look, you need to go and set for yourselves men that are filled with the Spirit, that can help out with this need and making sure that people aren't overlooked. Here's the idea of the church, that we help meet each other's needs. When some people are strong, it means others are weak. When some have resources, it means that others have need. When some help encourage, it means that others need encouragement. There's going to be a time where you are an encourager. There's going to be a time where you can help meet the needs of someone else. There's also going to be a time where you need your needs met. There's going to be a time where you need encouragement in this life. Like the mycorrhizal network transferring nutrients, we are called to share strength, to share our faith, and to serve one another. A little too quick on the trigger there. Three more. We help bear one another's burdens. Galatians chapter 6 and verse 2. Bear one another's burdens, so fulfill the law of Christ. In the church, no one should suffer alone. We help others grow. Ephesians 4 and verse 15. Speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way. Mature believers, just like older trees in this network, help nourish and stabilize younger trees, younger believers, younger Christians. And then the last thing is we remember Christ is the source. Mycorrhizae helps to connect trees to each other. But for us, it's not about what I can give to someone else. It's understanding who is the source of all the blessings that I have. Who is the source of all of our life. John chapter 15 and verse 5. I am the vine, you are the branches. This is Jesus speaking. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit, for apart from me, you can do nothing. Something you and I probably need to be reminded of from time to time is that our blessings, our success, our achievements in life ultimately come from the source of life itself, and that is Jesus Christ. We don't generate nutrients. We pass along to others what we receive from him. You know, you hear people from time to time say, I've felt the prayers. I'm thankful for this congregation. Please keep the prayers coming. I've felt them. It's exactly like this underground network. It's a hidden network. None of you, when you look at a forest, none of us pay attention to the root system. We just see what's growing above the ground. We don't pay attention to what's under the ground. And it's a vast network. I can go back to the picture and show you, and there's better pictures out there. A lot of times, people may not see how foundations are connected here at Azalea City Church of Christ. But it's something that I think innately you and I understand, that I do have people that are here supporting me, that I do have people here that love me, that I do have people here that are praying for me. And I'm telling you, you may not see it, but you feel it. And that's the positives of being connected to such a great place and such a great institution.
Now to this. You can't read it. It's all right. Being a part of an underground network means that you and I win together. Let me run through a couple of examples real quick. You can find these throughout Scripture, and I'll throw the Scriptures out there for you. How about Moses, when Moses needed to help win the battle against the Amalekites? There was Joshua fighting. Moses was up on top of the mountain. And when Moses' arms were raised, Joshua prevailed against Amalek. But when Moses got tired and his arms started to sink and fall, Amalek prevailed against Joshua and the Israelites. Here's the deal. As long as his arms were raised, they were successful. So Aaron and Hur grabbed an elbow, right? They sat Moses down. They held his arms up. Moses could not have done that by himself that day. Even God-appointed leaders need help from time to time. We cannot stand alone. Victory came because others stepped in. How about Nehemiah? Nehemiah chapter 4 and verse 6. What did Nehemiah say when he helped rebuild the wall? He said the people had a mind to work. They had a sword in one hand and a hammer in the other. They were building with each other while defending themselves. When people have a mind to work, success happens. The wall was rebuilt despite the opposition. They had a shared vision, they had shared work, and it equaled success for them. Success here at Azalea City Church of Christ happens when people take ownership. How about in Mark chapter 2, 1 through 12, where this paralytic man who gets to Jesus to get healed, he could not have gotten there by himself. It was his four friends that cut the roof, right? And I know Terry preached on this not too long ago, and laid this man right at the feet of Jesus. And Jesus says, hey, because of your friend's faith, you are healed. Sometimes our breakthrough happens because people refuse to give up on us. How about David? David, such a great warrior, defeated Goliath, was king. But David needed his mighty men to help him out from time to time as well. 2 Samuel chapter 23, verses 8 through 17. Even faithful leaders need faithful companions. Jesus sent his disciples out, how? Two by two. Because he knew their ministry would not be effective if he sent them out alone. Ecclesiastes chapter 4 verses 9 through 12 tell us that two are better than one. They have a good reward for their labor. If one falls, the other helps lift him up. A threefold cord with God intimately woven into our relationships is not quickly broken. We're stronger, we're safer, we're more effective together. How about the church, the time they helped pray Peter out of prison? In Acts chapter 12, verses 5 through 17. I believe we agree here, the power of prayer, collective prayer, is powerful. Excuse me. That collective prayer is powerful, right? And we understand and believe in the power of prayer. How about Paul, as he was strengthened by multiple companions all through his missionary journeys in the book of Acts and also in 2 Timothy, where he talks about this, and you've got Barnabas, and you've got Mark, and you've got Silas, you even have Peter at times, you have Timothy at times, that all helped Paul out along the way. And we always credit Paul as being probably the greatest soul winner for Jesus Christ, save Jesus Christ himself. But Paul needed his hidden network. Paul needed help. Lou Holtz passed away just a couple of months ago. But Lou Holtz gives us, he says it's the three rules for living a good life. He said number one is to do the right thing. It's never a wrong time to do the right thing. It's never the right time to do the wrong thing. Always do the right thing. Do everything to the best of your ability, not because someone is watching and looking and observing. It's just the way that you need to live your life. Always do the right thing. Do everything you can to the best of your ability. And the third one, he says, let people know you genuinely care. Everyone you meet has a problem. Everyone you meet has an obstacle or a difficulty they're facing. Everyone you meet's in need of a good word because of that. I think Maya Angelou said it. She said something to the effect of, people will forget what you say and probably not remember what you do, but people will always remember how you make them feel. Isn't that true? Isn't that what the church should be? Who cares what you do for somebody and maybe what you say to somebody? All that's just words and maybe a little bit of action. People are going to remember you by the way that you make them feel, good or bad. Here's the deal. Don't just come to church. Don't just let it be a part of your routine. Check in a box. Be connected to it. Don't just, again, check a box and say, look, I attended worship today, but invest in it. And don't live your life in isolation. Live as the early church did, with all things in common. If you have any need this morning, please come forward as we stand and sing together.